So I'm Sergi Jordà. I've been making music for the last 30-something years, but I would say that more than a musician, I consider myself as a music inventor. So I not only like to make music, but to make tools for making music. I've been doing that forever. I mean, when I was a teenager, I was inventing things with cassette players and installing microphones on public telephones and doing feedbacks and things like that. 74, that was the time where cassette players had 5 buttons, you remember? By then, I was completely shocked by an album by Soft Machine, which was Soft Machine 6, where there's a kind of very repetitive electric piano tracks. I convinced several friends to record as many telephones as they could, and then that we should meet everyone with his own cassette player and his own bunch of cassettes from telephones. And the jam was about putting non-answering telephones or occupied telephones. So it was about that. And we never made it. I mean, it was meant to be a jam session with my friends. We were 13. They were more into Pink Floyd. It was Dark Side of the Moon. But I was more into Soft Machine 6. I mean, I thought I had convinced them, but we never managed to do that session. However, I did my homework. So I recorded a lot of telephones. When I was doing that as a teenager, my music background was zero. And in fact, I've considered myself always quite bad as a conventional musician. I mean, my sense of timing and of pitch and these things are not very good. I studied music. I mean, I studied music later, maybe at 16. I decided to buy a saxophone. I start taking lessons, but I got bored with studying. I knew I was never going to become a good performer. I was practicing scales, and it could last for 3 or 4 minutes before I would start biting the mouthpiece and yelling into the saxophone. So I saw that that was not my path. In parallel, while I was studying saxophone and music theory, I was studying physics. That was early 80s. It was a combination of things. I discovered computers, which is something weird to say now, but obviously in the 80s, you had to be specifically exposed to discover computers. So in 82, 83, while I was studying physics, I discovered computers in the department. They give us a very quick crash course, and they said, okay, next week, do the Fourier transform. It changed my life, because I learned that I loved programming. It was before MIDI. At the same time, I was starting to see that somehow people were using computers for making music. I remember Laurie Anderson, Superman. I mean, hearing that times and I had never heard about the word sampler. And I said, what is that? How can this girl do this music? And I really wondering what's going on, because this repetitive, you know, that's not a voice, that's not a clarinet, and it's not a synthesizer in the sense that I knew them. So I discovered, that's a computer. So I understood in 82, 83, wow, you can make music with computers. But instead of wanting to become a kind of an electroacoustic musician, I was too much into free jazz to become a studio musician. I didn't care about studio composition. I was really into performance, even if I knew I was a bad performer, because for me it was not about making notes and pitches and scales and playing at 7-4. It was, somehow I understood. At the rhythm I'm learning, the saxophone, I will never reach the level I need to say what I could say. So I would take a shortcut, and that was my life. In fact, in 82, 83, I decided quite pragmatically that I would become a computer improviser. So that's how things started. In the late 80s and early 90s, I was doing what was called machine listening. It was a kind of a very academic stuff, but it's not very fashionable. I was doing programs that improvised with people. And I have tracks with acoustic performers and me conducting a computer and making the computer react to all that.
Yeah.
one of the reasons I stopped doing this machine listening thing is because I had the intuition, or somehow I discovered, that the more intelligent a system is, the harder it is to drive it. And since I also wanted to make kind of very sharp music, sharp in the sense of John Zorn, where you can do quick changes, and if you have a system that is very intelligent, it's a bit like driving a big boat, okay? So if you want to turn 180 degrees, it may take you like forever. Once I discovered that may be 92, 93, 94, I decided to go to simple and much more direct systems that somehow are closer to the instrumental idea, I mean, to the performer idea. Because a machine listening thing may be closer to a musician than to an instrument. So I went into sensors and going more towards the direction of the computer as an instrument, not as a musical entity with a lot of knowledge. So I somehow found the balance between making systems not too intelligent, because otherwise then you cannot drive them, but neither too simple so that they are similar to an acoustic instrument. And in fact, I think that most people who use laptops now in live situation, they use it more like conductors than like performers. I mean, it's better to save your energy and distribute your idea of control. So it's more like an orchestra in the sense that you don't have to be telling everything to everyone all the time, but just some things to some people when you want them to do something or you want them to change what they're doing. Having an orchestra doesn't necessarily mean to have scores. It's this idea about the computer as a bunch of agents more than as an instrument. I mean, I think that's the essence of computer music. In the late 90s, I set up a band, which was probably the only band I have been able to set up. This band had two laptops and running my own software, and a third player who would be playing bass clarinet, alto sax, and turntables. And for me, it was a period where I've been more productive in the strictly musical side, because I had invented some software and I didn't need to change it. And I used it for 3 years as it was, and I felt it was great. And with this band, we were really playing, and we made a few albums. It was called the F-Mol Trio, F-M-O-L Trio. And we didn't do that many concerts, but we released 3 live albums, which for 2 years, it's quite okay. For me, it's kind of the more musical period in my life. Then, the next step, I guess, it's inventing this instrument called the React Table. at some point in 2003, I said, now I know a lot. I've been doing lots of things, and I'm able to make the invention of my life. I'm able to synthesize all I know. I convinced other researchers, and we start working in a project which was, let's say, quite well-defined, and that was presented to the world in 2005. What we didn't expect is that it would become popular at this level. And that was something that we couldn't predict, because Internet 2.0 was not yet there when we were making that. So, I mean, there were no wikis or blogs or YouTube. And, of course, it got popular just because we were lucky. One day we made a video. I mean, like, in 1 hour we made a stupid video and we put it in YouTube. And we start seeing that day by day that it was becoming huge, 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 huge. And some months later, 3 million people had seen it. And of these 3 million, Björk was one of them. And she called us and say, well, you know, I'm Björk, I want your instrument. In fact, she didn't call herself. But the manager said, okay, Björk wants to meet you in 3 days in Paris. Bring the React table. But we had no proofs. In fact, they didn't give us a ticket. So we went with the React table to the hotel, and I wasn't very sure that that was not a joke. But we decided to take the chance, and here she was. So things get much bigger then. She was using that in front of 100,000 people every evening for 1 year and a half, so it became really big. So the React table got really big, and to come back to my music, the problem was that we were asked to do many, many concerts. And people were not willing to listen to my music. They wanted to listen to the React table. And I'm a bit shy with these ideas. I mean, I don't want to impose my tastes on anyone. So I ended up performing a kind of balance. And you know, balances, I mean, are often not too interesting. I mean, it's between, okay, I don't play techno because I don't know how to do it, and I don't make weird noise because you are not willing to listen to it. I will try to set a space, just because, in fact, with the React table, I was playing in front of 500 people. These 500 people didn't know anything about my music. They just had seen some videos, and they knew that that was what Björk was doing. Well, I got tired. I didn't have much time to rehearse or to practice. I mean, that brings us back to the beginning. And I didn't have the instrument at home. Well, even if I had invented, I mean, it takes time to discover the personality of something. So I wasn't a virtuoso. And not only that, I hadn't found my voice on the instrument, because my voice was compromised between what I felt like doing and what I thought that people felt like listening. And that makes very bad compromise situation. This situation lasted from 2005, 6, 7, and I started performing less and less in 8. I did some concerts in 9, and I don't know if I ever have done any concert in 2010. Well, with the Reactable, we started making these tables. They were very expensive. We made a company, a spin-off company. We started selling tables. They became a bit less expensive, but they still were quite expensive. Like now, they cost 7,000 euros, so it's not for everyone. Then we think, let's make a version for smartphones and iPads. And at the beginning, it was a bit also of a compromise, a commercial compromise. I mean, people ask for that. However, we know that, I mean, an iPhone is not a table, so it will not do the same. But somehow we tried. And the results were great, but I'm not talking about money. I'm talking about music. Because having made something that 20, 30, 50 people use is one thing, make something that 100,000 people use is a very different one. So at the beginning, we start seeing videos of persons, musicians or non-musicians that were using that, of two-year-old girls that were playing with our instruments and what they were doing. And we start seeing that people start using them in ways that you didn't expect. And it's not a cliche that things nowadays go faster than before. I mean, between Adolf Sax and Coleman Hawkins, there might be 70 years of boring saxophone music. Between Les Paul and Jimi Hendrix, maybe there are 30 years. So now I think it can be a matter of days or weeks to see what people do with your tools. So I was quite excited watching videos of unknown people playing the React table on an iPhone or on an iPad. So I decided to give a try. So I got an iPad and I uploaded React table, And I found it was great. And in fact, it was more intimate than the table because I could carry it with me. So for a few days, I've been performing. I don't publish it because somehow you also feel a bit pressured since the music from the inventor of the React table, okay? it's not meant to compete with all the other people, no? So I would just want to be one more. Thank you.